Now, moving on from Arab bookbindings as such, moving on to the development of Persian bookbindings initially followed Arab bookbindings to a very great extent. This is in keeping with the fact that during the 14th century, when bookbindings in the Arab world, and in Egypt in particular, were reaching the peak of their development, Arab influence was also manifesting itself in Persia. And the designs on some of the few known Persian bookbindings from this early period are very similar, as I think you can see, to Arab bookbindings in both their design and their finish and their technique. However, with the onset of the 15th century, the artistic stimulus in the Islamic world was moved eastwards to Persia, and certain fundamental changes took place, which I will elaborate in a moment. This is a Quran cover made in Marare in Persia in 1338. So you see it's comparable in date with some of the Arab bookbindings we have looked at, and very similar in style and technique. Now this shows a drawing of a design for a Persian bookbinding from the 15th century. And I think what it does do, it shows the way in which the central medallion, scallop medallion, has become a dominant feature, with the corner pieces becoming more and more elaborate, and sometimes a central motif is changed to the extent you see on the right. Now, some designs were undoubtedly drawn out on paper, and then they were transferred, they were pounced by means of a method by which the design was pricked onto the leather, or it was pricked and marked out so that the designer could then see where to follow the lines for his tooling. But one of the major developments that took place in Persian bookbinding was the development of stamping a large area with a brass or metal stamp. And before we actually look at some, I've included this illustration of a bookbinder which comes from a Mughal manuscript which is in the Freer Gallery of Art in Washington. It's called the Jahangir album, obviously belonged to the Emperor Jahangir, and in the margin of that manuscript there are a number of different craftsmen shown working, and this illustration is particularly interesting because you can see him actually stamping the central part of the book cover, and you can see another cover down by his feet beside the low table with a flap, and you can also see two implements, awls for creating the design on the table beside him. There are very few illustrations of actual bookbinders at work. There is another Indian manuscript which was produced in the 16th century, which is in a private collection in London, and that actually shows boys bringing in the skins. It shows someone paring the skins, taking off the all the extra material so that the leather is very thin, and another person actually sizing up the leather for a particular book. Now, these are some engraved brass stamps dating from the 17th century. They're all Persian. They're all in our collection. We do have quite a good collection of tools and stamps. Another place that has a particularly good collection is the Chester Beatty Library in Dublin. And these give you an idea of the range and the elaboration that was to be introduced by Persian bookbinders as the centuries progressed. Although technically it was a very impressive development to begin with, it did, in my opinion, mark the beginning of the end of the actual craft of bookbinding, in that a large number of stamped bookbindings are not of the same quality as was originally possible when the binding was tooled by hand. And again, I've put these implements together. They are all Persian binding tools from the 19th century. You have on the right-hand side, obviously the handle is missing, but this is a typical steel paring implement to scrape the skins and is still in use today by Western as well as Islamic bookbinders. There is another one with this very elaborate mother-of-pearl handle and a pierced ornament. And then you have this iron awl with this open shoulder with an ivory handle, and you can see the gold inlaid down the central handle as well. These are all leather stamps dating from the 17th and 18th centuries from Persia, which again give you an idea of the range of designs, which must have created a very delicate pattern when they were transposed to the leather, either by pressing, putting in a screw press, again going back to some of the remarks made by As-Sufyani or Ibn Badis, or else hammered down. Now this is one of our finer early 16th century Persian stamped covers, probably made in Tabriz or Shiraz. And this likewise is another early 16th or late 16th or early 17th century Persian book cover, produced in the style of Herat. One of the aspects of Persian bookbinding was that they actually used painters to decorate the leather. These animals are actually painted in gold onto the leather, and in some cases some of the bookbindings are used almost as illustrations rather than book covers. But you can see the central shape is still the same, and you can see in the top, right at the top, the cloud form is of a very strong Chinese inspiration, which does in fact bear witness to the very strong cultural links which existed at that stage between the Royal Academy at Herat, established by Prince Baisongur Mirza, and the Chinese, both in trade and cultural relations generally. Now, one of the other techniques which the Persians introduced was this question of painting a book cover and then covering it with varnish or lacquer. And my remarks just a moment ago about actually using the covers to as a means of creating a picture, I think you can see very clearly here with this picture of a prince with some of his attendants in a garden. A very typical style of Shirazi painting, and some of these lacquered book covers, I was able to see one today at the library at the King Saud University. The difficulty about these book covers is that once they start to flake, once the lacquer begins to break, the whole a cover can disintegrate very quickly, and you're just left with the basic surface decoration of gypsum, which was used as a basic ground preparation. So any book covers of this sort that begin to crack and should obviously be treated by conservation staff straight away. Now, one of the other Persian techniques was the introduction of filigree work, which is also used in Ottoman Turkey and in Mughal India. And we had in fact an exhibition at the British Museum in London about 18 months ago, which aimed to show the strong cultural connections between those three great Islamic empires, the Ottoman Turks, the Safavid Persians, and the Mughal Indians. And you are now entering on the sort of period where it's difficult sometimes to be precise as to where any detached covers of this sort might have been produced. But in fact, this cover on the right is the inside cover of the one on the left. And you can see in the inside cover the basic shape is much the same as I have already showed you. Each of these gold flowers is actually cut out of gold, of leather, and pasted on to a painted or paper background. The outside cover, the central panel, you can possibly see in the middle a horizontal line which shows how when the pattern was engraved on the brass block was used to decorate one half and then was reversed and used to decorate the other half. And this goes back to some of the remarks I made about the introduction of stamping, although technically it enabled bookbinders to create much more elaborate patterns, it also did mark the beginning of the end of the fine sort of craftsmanship, although obviously aspects such as the filigree work were very impressive. This I've included also to show a detail of a filigree work from one of our manuscripts in our library. This is the inside cover with this central medallion with this dragon, which is actually cut out of gold leather onto a blue painted ground, and you can see then the gold painted extraneous ornaments, and you can possibly see some of the leather grain. Obviously this has been enlarged quite considerably. Now this I've included a detail of a 17th or 18th century Persian cover during conservation in our conservation workshop in the museum. The cover itself was very badly damaged by damp. Damp, of course, being one of the most harmful elements that can affect these very delicate objects. And we removed the leather filigree central medallion, and underneath we found this different coloured silk, and you can see that there was green and pink silk threads which were used, and the area around it is of paper, which is, as you can see, very delicately gold painted. And this might make the point a little bit clearer. There is the cover when it was put back with the central filigree work replaced, and you can just see a little bit of the green silk on the left hand side and these very elaborate monkeys and animals in the corner pieces. And I will show you also the reverse of the same cover before we started treating it for damp. Now I imagine obviously that damp is not such a severe problem in Riyadh as it is obviously in London, but any damage of this sort has to be treated straight away, and certainly libraries now like the British Library and the Bodleian Library have got a number of specialists, and our own specialist also who's now worked on Islamic bookbinding, and I'm sure would be happy to give advice. Now, moving on to Turkish bookbinding, first of all, I wanted to start with a very typical 18th or 19th century bookbinding to show you both the basic type of design that was used. The corner pieces were extended so that they become a much more prominent part of the design. The red colour that was used in conjunction with the gold is very typical, and you also get three basic types of decorative motifs. You get the sars leaf, which you also get in ceramics and textiles. You get the qi, or stylized Chinese cloud form. And you also get a ribbon type of decoration, which is usually called the rumi, which is derived from an acanthus plant, and which has some connections with Byzantine decoration, and thereby a precious connotation. But I think the sars, that is the leaf that you can see, that long elongated leaf in a central medallion, is the most typically of the Turkish motifs. Now this shows a Turkish bookbinding with an incomplete text from Surah 17. I think you can see just on the spine. It finishes Wakana Ba'aduhum just at the top. Again, it's a similar technique to that I've just talked about that was developed by the Persian bookbinders. You can see that the cover was covered with blue silk, and then this gold filigree was fixed down on top of that. But you've still got the same basic design, just being used in a different and very striking way. Now, this manuscript is in Berlin, I think. It's a leather binding, a Turkish leather binding, of a very early period from 1597 to 1600. It is, in fact, signed that it was painted and decorated by someone called Hasan Pasha, and it's the Egri Fetih Name, which is the text inside this cover. It shows the flap very clearly, and it shows this very elaborate type of floral decoration, complicated floral decoration, which was used with very great effect by the Ottoman Turkish craftsmen. You possibly can see in the central medallion this ribbon form that I was just mentioning a moment ago on this 16th or 17th century Turkish book cover, with the very elaborate use of gold on this red background. And the next slide, if you bear that in mind, that is the outside cover. This is the inside cover, and again you can see a very elaborate form of gold leather filigree work. I stress the leather filigree because sometimes some of this filigree work, because leather was rather more difficult to cut, paper came to be substituted at a later stage, and sometimes paper filigree patterns were cut and pasted down. It must have been an extraordinarily difficult task actually to have cut such delicate work and then actually fixed it in position. But in this case, this is leather filigree on a blue painted background with these gold painted additions above and below and round the central medallion. And I think again, I would repeat what I said a moment ago about the unity of Islamic art. You see it again and again in these Turkish, Persian and Arab bindings, that the derivation of so many of these styles of decoration goes back right to the very beginning, but that in terms of technique, obviously, there were developments. But there is this very strong underlying thread. Now, here we have a rather unusual book cover from Ottoman Turkey, probably dating to the 19th century, because we had both the... This is an embroidered book binding, and we had both the leather and the embroidery analysed. And we think that the embroidery is probably from the late 19th century. Embroidered book bindings are not particularly common. There are some in the Topkapi Palace Library in Istanbul, but they are not a particularly common form of bookbinding, and this one has a particularly attractive floral work, as you can see. You probably can't see in the slide, but in the original you can see the silver thread that was woven through both on the outside and in certain other areas to highlight certain aspects. And again, just to show you, when we took it apart, this is not really very easy for you to see here, but it does show and was particularly interesting, obviously, to our textile experts, because we have a department of textiles which has a very good collection of Islamic rugs and textiles, and they were interested, obviously, in seeing and analysing the type of knot work where it was produced. Because one of the things about Turkish bookbinding is that unless they specify where the manuscript was produced. We know from certain travellers' accounts that there were leather, active leather industry in places like Erzurum and other places in eastern Turkey, in Konya, in Bursa, but we don't have any evidence as yet of actual bindings being produced in centres other than the capital, which we must assume, obviously, most of them were produced in Istanbul. But I am very grateful to Dr. Peter Schroeder from the University of Leiden, because one of the manuscripts that I imagine will be shown in your future calligraphy exhibition is of a Turkish manuscript with a very fine Turkish binding, which has a dedication, and the work is actually dated and attributed to Bursa, which was then, of course, the Ottoman capital before the capture of Constantinople in the early 16th century. So, little by little, I hope, as we unearth some of the other book bindings, which I am sure are available in some of the collections in Saudi Arabia, we will be able to come to some more definite conclusions, because in the West, most of these book bindings are detached from their original manuscripts. Now, this is a Turkish book cover, probably of the 17th or 18th century, with an inscription from the Hadith in Nasqi script around the border, and it's quite a typical type of cover which was used for works obviously of the Hadith or of another religious nature. And you can see the central mark where the stamp was made, and then you've got this very clear script of the text around the outer margin. In general, I think Turkish book bindings are much more austere, they're much more simple than the Persian book bindings, but they are very impressive in terms of their technique. They did achieve a very high standard of craftsmanship. And this one is from the Topkapi Library, Palace Library in Istanbul, probably from the 18th century, and I've put it in to show again the variety, the different type of floral work with this very complicated floral work. But the border, the marginal ornamentation of these repeating S shapes, these patterns, is very typical and was used as far back, obviously, as the early Arab bindings. This is a manuscript in our collection. It's a Turkish book of prayers, probably produced, it's a very small manuscript, probably produced for a traveller to take with him on his journeys. The manuscript itself is dated Sha'ban 1240, that is March 1825. And one of the interesting things about this cover is that it is painted and covered with a surface decoration of varnish. There is no lucerne or flap, and was not it was not made with a lucerne. And I think at this stage, in the early 19th century, you begin to see the development or the increasing influence of European techniques of book production being introduced into Istanbul. The Ottoman Turkish Empire at that stage was particularly influenced by French styles of decoration in their furnishings, their architecture for their palaces, and this book, this manuscript, the cover, undoubtedly was produced under European influence, as I think you can see straight away. Another aspect of European influence was the introduction of slip cases where manuscripts could be actually put inside another cover. And this is probably of the late 18th or early 19th centuries. A Turkish book cover, bookcase. It would be interesting, obviously, to be able to find more Turkish manuscripts that actually have been kept with their original covers, so that we could be more certain of the date. Now, leaving Turkish bookbindings, I will finish just with a few slides of some Indian Islamic bookbindings. It's often overlooked that a large number of the techniques that we have seen that were introduced by Persian and Turkish bookbinders were also carried on by bookbinders working in India, in particular in places like Kashmir. And this binding is very close to some of the Persian bookbindings I have shown you. The outside cover is painted and decorated with varnish. The inside cover, of which you see here, is composed of these panels of white alum tanned leather, which are fixed to the red basic background. And in all the different marginal medallions, you may just be able to make out in ta'liq calligraphy various verses from a poem. And you can also see how the central white alum tanned leather has been cut to reveal some of the red leather underneath. Now, the little roundels also in the corner show gold leather filigree on a blue painted background, close to some of the Turkish and Persian items we have seen. But undoubtedly, this work was produced in India. We don't know exactly where, but obviously following the traditional Islamic bookbinding techniques and patterns. And this is the spine of a Quran that we have in our library, which was made in Kashmir in the very early 19th century. I have not shown the cover of the Quran. The Quran I just mentioned that I saw in the library of the King Saud University today is very similar, in fact, to the manuscript that we have. What I have shown here, though, is this rather not so technically well painted spine with these little yellow floral work, and the attempt to show raised end bands. The Islamic bookbinders traditionally Islamic bookbinders traditionally had a flat spine, because the books were either sewn or in some cases glued straight to the leather, and that is one reason, as with modern contemporary paperback publications, the text block and cover would come apart. Here, the painter has tried to recreate these bands by putting the yellow paint. Now, this, I think, also shows very clearly. This was a cover of a book made in Kashmir, probably in the 18th or early 19th century also. Same sort of techniques as we see in Persian and some Turkish bindings, but a very different approach to the overall design, with these projecting chevrons. But the central roundel with flowers is very close to some of the work produced at centres like Isfahan and Shiraz. And this is another Kashmiri 17th century bookbinding in our collection, with this extraordinarily delicate floral work and this very intricate overall pattern in the central panel. And I finish with a slide of four covers, all of which came from Ulwa in Rajputana. Ulwa was a very important trading center. These all come from the 19th century. What they do show, I think, particularly the binding up on the top right-hand corner, is the way in which patterns and stamping and the different type of colors used were continued until a comparatively recent date, that part of northwestern India, and I think again serve to show how the whole craft of Islamic bookbinding has remained an integral one, with this tremendous unity of style ranging right from the early 9th and 10th century bookbindings produced in the Arab world right up to some of these produced as recently as only 100 years ago. Thank you for listening so patiently.
Shukran, Dr. Haldane. أجدها مناسبة جيدة طالما أن الدكتور هلدين حقيقة ذكر أمرين، أحدهما عن المعرض الذي سيقام عن الخط العربي والآخر عن فنون تجليد الكتاب عند المسلمين. حقيقة هذا العام إن شاء الله ننوي أن نقيم معرضا عن تطور الخط العربي، وسيعرض في هذا المعرض المخطوطات الأصلية التي تمثل مراحل الخط العربي وأنواعه وكذلك انتشاره في العالم بشكل واسع وشامل. أما ما يخص تجليد أو فن تجليد الكتاب عند المسلمين، بالتعاون مع المتحف فيكتوريا ألبرت مستقبلا وفي العام القادم سيقام معرض إن شاء الله يمثل هذه الأشياء التي تفضل الدكتور هلدين وحاضر عنها هذه الأمسية أو في هذه الأمسية. حقيقة أود أن أكرر الشكر للدكتور هلدين على هذه المحاضرة الرائعة، والتي لا شك أظهر فيها هذا الفن الجميل عند المسلمين، والذي انتشر في أنحاء العالم ليعبر عن حضارة أهله الرائعة. الآن الحقيقة لدينا يعني متسع من الوقت ليجيب سعادة الدكتور هلدين على بعض الأسئلة. مرة أخرى أذكركم بأني طلبت من الأخوة أن يوزعوا عليكم بعض الأوراق من أجل كتابة الأسئلة، وشكرا. هناك سؤالين الحقيقة. السؤال الأول يقول: ما هي العوامل أو الأسس التي من الممكن الاعتماد عليها في تقدير عمر الجلد في حالة عدم وجود المخطوط؟
Thank you. I think there are certain specialist conservators, if I understand the question correctly, who are able to create a good binding in a traditional Islamic form. There is someone working in London who I know has bound a large Quran, which is now in the Islamic Cultural Centre at Regent's Park, and he has used a very typical Mamluk style of motif, albeit in a simplified way, to create this new binding.
السؤال الآخر: متى بدأت عملية تجليد المخطوطات بين قوسين، في أي قرن، وكذلك عملية الزخرفة والتذهيب؟
The development of bindings for manuscripts began as early as the 5th and 6th centuries, as I mentioned, with Coptic book bindings, which are still to be found in certain places in Egypt. The earliest, we don't know exactly when the first Arab book was bound, but it would certainly be of some time around about the early 8th or 9th centuries. It is very difficult to be precise about a date, but it certainly would have begun as early at that stage. The whole question of binding books is an interesting one, in that before books were bound in what we call the codex form, that is, in a paginated way, bound between boards, they used other methods were used, such as scrolls, such as used by the Chinese in scroll form, and these other methods, of course, were continued by other cultures and civilizations. As to when gold was introduced, this must have been at a very early stage also, because even the very early Arab bindings, although some of them are not decorated with gold, there are quite a significant number which have even a simple form of gold dot punching. And so again, I think we can say that they go back to the 8th or the 9th century.
شكرا للدكتور الضبيب. الحقيقة في ملاحظة عن السؤال الأول، والدكتور بيعلق على أنه الإجابة ما كانت واضحة، ولعلي أنا يعني لم أنتبه للترجمة أو للسؤال، فيؤكد الدكتور بأن السؤال الأول لم يجب عليه، وهو يختص بتحديد زمن الجلد في حالة عدم وجود المخطوط والمقاييس. صحيح يا دكتور أحمد، كيف والمقاييس؟ السؤال الدكتور أحمد ضبيب. جميل. إذن نرجع للسؤال الأول. على كذا السؤال يقول، الأخ المترجم ممكن ينتبه معنا أيضا، ما هي العوامل أو الأسس التي من الممكن الاعتماد عليها في تقدير عمر الجلد في حالة عدم وجود المخطوط؟ يعني المخطوط المكتوب طبعا، بس موجود عندك الجلد فقط. لا، هو الجلد نفسه بس المخطوط مو موجود. لا، هو يقصد الجلد بدون المخطوطة، لأن المخطوطة مذكور فيها التاريخ. المهم هذا السؤال أنا يجب أني ألتزم بالموضوعية وبالأمانة وأنقلك كما هو. شكرا دكتور أحمد.
I think the factors that one has to use are the obviously partly the condition, the type of the style of decoration that was used. I hope it was clear from the slides I showed that the very early Arab bookbindings had a very simple type of design. I did say early on that it is very difficult to be precise. Sometimes one can tell from the type of paper pasteboard, which I also showed you on the back of two of the Qurans, both from the type of paper used, the type of script, the type of ink, one can come to some general conclusions, but it's quite possible that one might be 100 years out either way. It's not always easy to be exact, which is why in any dating I have been fairly tentative. I hope that answers the question.
سؤال آخر. من الكتب التي اهتمت بصناعة الكتب كتاب صناعة الكتب لابن رسول الملك اليمني، هل اطلعتم عليه؟
أو اطلعتم عليها أي المخطوطة؟
I'm not certain which Yemeni manuscript we are referring to.
يا أخي ممكن أعيد السؤال مرة ثانية. هو اليمني ترجع للمؤلف وليست المخطوطة، لكن من الكتب التي اهتمت بصناعة الكتب كتاب صناعة الكتب لابن رسول الملك اليمني.
No, I don't think I know of this work from what I've been told just now, so I would obviously welcome if I could be given the title and the details after the lecture.
السؤال الآخر هل نستطيع أن نقول بأن الأتراك هم من الرواد الأوائل في تجليد الكتب؟ ومن هم في رأيك اليوم يعتبرون من الفنانين في التجليد في العالم؟ هكذا يقول السؤال.
I think one can say that the Turks made some major contributions to Islamic bookbinding. I don't think it would be right to single them out any more than I think it would be right to single out the Persians or the Arab bookbinders. I think they all contributed in different ways. I think that the Turkish bookbinders did, as I mentioned, perfect their craft to a very great extent, but as a general rule, and I think this is true of their decorative arts in general, they were not very adventurous, they were not a very innovative people in cultural terms as far as the arts, the visual arts are concerned. This is obviously a personal view, but I don't think compared to the developments that took place in Persia or the Arab world, they were as innovative. As to who are the leading practitioners of bookbinding today, I fear that there are very few practitioners now of the traditional craft. We know that in Turkey there were some bookbinders working in the traditional method as recently as the 1920s, but I would welcome any comments if any of you know of bookbinders working in this country or in the Yemen or in any of the Arab countries doing creating book covers of a traditional type. I don't think at this stage there one can really say that there is anyone who is carrying on the same tradition. I think that that has now, alas, that craftsmanship has been lost.
سؤال التالي هل لكم أن تعطونا فكرة عن دباغة الجلود وإعطائها هذا اللون البني؟
Does the questioner mean the different colours available on the book covers, such as the red or different type of browns? Because skins obviously were dyed with various vegetable dyes to create blues or reds or green patterns. As to the method by which the leather was produced in a very whitened form, the traditional method was that a pit was dug in the earth, and in this hole various vegetable deposits and potash were put in, and the skins were left in that hole basically to absorb all these deposits, and on drying the skin came out as in a very whitened form.
سؤال آخر باللغة الإنجليزية وممكن الدكتور هلدين أن يجيب عليه.
The question is, it seems to me that the cover made can fit any book of its size.